when he just stood there with the book in his hands.
"Nothing,"
he said, as he placed the book in a bag and then went around the room to collect the other artifacts.
"Let's go."
He tucked the bag under his coat as the table began descending again.
"I need to get back into the safe before they realize I'm gone or the whole thing is blown." "I'll take that first,"
she said, holding him at knife point. He began to feel a sharp, driving pressure inside his skull, Viola's way of warning him not to push. He hesitated for a moment, but with voices still haunting his mind, urging him on, he knew what he was meant to do. The opium smoke was growing thick in the room, but he wasn't sure how much it had affected her. He'd have to take his chances that it had weakened her enough for him to get away. Before she could make the pain in his head any worse, he threw the bag into the air, and when her eyes followed it, he attacked. The Reveal. The minutes ticked by. 10. 15. What's taking so long? Esta didn't doubt that Hart had a way out of the safe. She'd seen him do more difficult escapes before. At least the safe wasn't filled with water, but he wasn't a thief. Once Hart was out, she had no idea how he would be able to manage the rest on his own before the Order realized what was happening. 20 minutes. The audience began to murmur expectantly. Esta forced herself to keep a pleasant, unworried smile pasted on her face, but she felt every pair of eyes in the audience focused on her.
"It's taking him quite a while,"
the High Princept said, his expression unsure. She knew he was worried. It was one thing to play a harmless prank on a performer, but it was another to watch a man possibly dying on stage while you stood by doing nothing to help. Sam Watson looked a little too pleased. He leaned over as though to whisper, but spoke loud enough that anyone on stage could have heard him.
"Perhaps the great Hart Darrigan isn't quite the master of the elements he claims to be."
Across the stage, Evelyn smirked.
"I'm sure you're mistaken,"
Esta said, trying to pull away without much luck.
"I have every faith he will succeed. He has command over forces far beyond your understanding."
But as the seconds ticked by, that faith began to falter. In half an hour, the audience was shouting for them to open the safe and let the magician out, but Esta told them to wait. If there was any hope that giving up all her secrets had worked, she needed to give Hart time to get the book and the artifacts and to get back into the safe, so they could both escape together. Across the stage, the High Princept was growing more agitated, and Evelyn was watching with her red mouth drawn into a smirk and her eyes bright with anticipation. A moment later, she touched the High Princept on the arm and leaned over to whisper something into his ear. The old man's eyes went curiously blank, and though he seemed completely calm, he barked for the vault to be opened. Evelyn's doing. The audience went quiet as the combination was given, and the large tumbler of the lock was rotated carefully. Esta tried to pull herself away from Sam Watson, who seemed to have a grip of steel. If she could just get away, she could slow time and find Hart. She could maybe even get him back into that safe before anyone understood what was happening. But before she could find a way to disentangle herself from the reporter, the door swung open. A gasp swept over the theater when the audience realized Hart was no longer in the safe.
"It's the girl,"
Evelyn said, pointing at Esta as she came across the stage to where Sam still held on to her.
"I told you, didn't I? I warned you they were up to something."
"So you did,"
Sam Watson said as he gripped her arm even more tightly and jerked her around to face the High Princept.
"This is all part of the effect, part of the act,"
Esta tried to tell them, but she couldn't keep the tremor out of her voice.
"You simply have to close the safe and give him a chance to reappear."
"She's lying,"
Evelyn said, walking across the stage to where Sam Watson held Esta.
"Hart Darrigan makes other people disappear. He never gives up the stage on his own. He's up to something, and she's helping him just like I told you. She's no Baron's daughter. It's all a con, I heard them myself. Here's to bringing down the Order. Isn't that what you said?
Est shook her head, but she couldn't force out the words.
Where's the magician?
The Princept snarled, so close to her face that she could smell the alcohol on his breath.
Where is Darrigan?
I don't know,
she said honestly. Not that he would believe her. Not that any of them would believe her.
Lock the entire building down,
the High Princept shouted, his aged face turning an alarming shade of red.
I want every inch of this place searched until he's found, and you,
he pointed at Jack Gru, who was sitting white-faced and wide-eyed in the front row.
This is your fault. I won't forget that you were the one who brought them here.
Then he turned to Sam Watson.
Take her to the safe room, and if you ever want a chance at full membership, do not let her get away.
The Princept stormed off down the steps, into the chaotic crowd, leaving Esta trapped by Sam Watson's strong grip. The theater had erupted into chaos. She tried to shake off Watson, but every time she tried to maneuver, he countered it easily. Finally, he had her pinned so she couldn't move.
Please, this is a simple misunderstanding. I had nothing to do with him disappearing.
Shut your lying mouth,
Watson said, pulling her arms back until her joints screamed in pain.
You don't think I know you are a part of this, too? I know you're one of them.
Before he could finish, Watson went stiff and released his hold on her. Suddenly, his head snapped backward, and then he buckled forward, doubling over and falling to the floor. Esta stared, shocked.
John Yu?
She didn't have time to react before John Yu materialized before her.
Come,
he said, gesturing toward the back of the theater where a large man stood in their way. John Yu put his arms up, ready, but she grabbed his hand instead and pulled at time. All around them, the movement in the room went slow. The frantic activity stilled. Men in tuxedos halted mid-step as they tried to climb over one another, their faces portraits of rage and fear. Evelyn's overly painted face froze in its look of shocked surprise as she reached for Sam, who was now lying on the floor. John Yu's eyes went wide, and then he gave her a slow smile.
I see,
he said, nodding with appreciation.
Come, we'll go together.
She watched as he maneuvered the small discs in his hand and saw the shadow fall around them.
It's safer this way.
Then he started to lead her in the direction of the rear of the stage.
We have to stop Hart,
she told him, pulling in the opposite direction. He changed the act. He's going after the book.
I know,
John Yu said, refusing to go.
You know?
It was all part of the plan. John Yu gave her another tug, and she was confused enough that she let herself be pulled toward the room, styled like an Egyptian tomb. When they found themselves back in that ornate chamber, she pulled him to a stop.
I don't understand.
All around them, the building was silent, and the eyes of the enormous figures lining the walls seemed to watch them.
You knew he was going to switch the act on me?
John Yu nodded.
He came to Dolph with the idea a couple of days ago. He said he wanted to draw suspicion away from you.
No, that's not right. It's another trick, she said, sure that it was only one more level of Hart Darrigan's game. It had to be.
If it's a trick, Viola will dispense with him soon enough.
Come. She didn't trust Hart, but she knew what Viola could do. So Esta allowed John Yu to lead her through the chaos of the building and out onto the street. Outside, the night was alive with confusion. Already she could hear the clanging sound of the fire brigades rushing toward them. There were flames lighting the western edge of the building, the dark smoke pouring out of broken windows. They used the confusion to dart away toward the place where Dolph's carriage was waiting. When they made it to the carriage, Nibs looked down at them from the driver's seat.
Where's Darrigan?
He's not out yet, John Yu asked. Nibs shook his head. Esta's chest felt too tight to draw breath. All she'd shown him, and it hadn't been enough. She heard the sound of footsteps coming toward them, and they all turned as one. For a heartbeat, hope flared in Esta's chest. For the space of a second, she expected to see Hart. But it was Viola, dressed all in black and running toward them.
Go!
she shouted as a group of men stormed out the door behind her. She turned long enough to throw a knife back at them, hitting one in the throat so he crumpled to the street.
"But Darrigan,"
Nibs said as Viola climbed into the cab.
"It doesn't matter. I have the book,"
Viola told him.
"You're sure?"
Nibs asked, his eyes flashing up to the building.
"I took care of him."
"What do you mean?"
Esta asked, not wanting to really understand, but understanding just the same.
"He's gone, capisce?"
She held up the bag.
"We have what we came for."
Viola slammed the door of the carriage. Nibsy whipped the horses into action, and the carriage leaped away, leaving Hart Darrigan behind them. Viola's eyes met Esta's.
"I'm sorry,"
she said, and there was real regret, real pain in them.
"I know the two of you had grown close, but I couldn't let him take this."
Viola reached across the carriage and touched Esta's knee gently.
"If there was another way..."
"I know," Esta told her truthfully, but she couldn't stop the burn of tears behind her eyes.
"You truly killed him?"
John Yu asked.
"He attacked me first."
John Yu frowned. Dolph trusted him. Viola's eyes met his.
"He shouldn't have."
Esta turned away from them both, pretending to stare out of the window of the carriage. Instead, she removed the clipping from the bodice of her dress. Despite everything that had gone wrong, it gave her some relief to see that it had returned to its original form.
"No,
Dolph never should have trusted Hart Darrigan. But at least he hadn't won. The past seemed to have been returned to its original path, and the book was safe in Viola's care, which meant Esta still had a chance to complete the job she'd been sent to do. She'd stolen from Viola and Dolph before. She could do it again. She should have felt relieved, satisfied the job had been salvaged, so she didn't understand why the ache in her chest when she thought of Hart dead felt as though the night would swallow her whole. Madness in the Streets. Bella Strega. When they made it back to the Strega, Dolph was nowhere to be found.
"We should wait for him,"
Viola said when Nibs tried to take the bag she had carried from Khafre Hall. He tugged a bit harder, but Viola refused to relinquish it.
"I give this to Dolph and no one else."
Nibs frowned.
"Then I suppose we should send someone to fetch him."
No one expected that the bowler-hatted boys would return bearing his body instead. They'd found Dolph shot in the back and already dead, lying across Lena's grave. The boys carried him in with a quiet solemnity that seemed at odds with the garish shirts and vests, and they placed him on the zinc bar top. Even in death, his skin nearly as pale as the flash of white in his hair, Dolph's very presence commanded the room. The motley bunch of men and women he'd unified under his mark stood in an uneasy silence. There was no sign of the usual warmth of magic in the bar room. It had all but drained from the air, as though Dolph had taken it with him as he took his last breath, as though each of them understood that the one thing that had linked them was now gone, and in his absence, in the absence of the power of his mark, a new consensus would have to be negotiated.
"He'd want us to go on,"
Nibs said, his voice grave.
"He'd want us to finish what we'd started."
Dolph's closest crew gathered around his usual table. Viola, John Yu, and Nibs. Esta hung back at first, but Viola took her by the arm and escorted her back with the rest. John Yu gave Nibs an encouraging look, and Nibs opened the bag and looked inside. Esta knew from the way his expression changed that something was wrong. With shaking hands, he dumped the contents on the table. A few misshapen rocks, a small ledger bearing the theater's logo, and the dried peelings from an orange. They all stared at the items in a horrified silence.
"No,"
Nibsy shook his head as he pawed through the items, turning them over, examining them.
"No,"
he shouted, pushing them from the table with a vicious swipe of his arm. He turned on Viola.
"This is your fault,"
he said. He had his finger in her face, and his expression was murderous.
"You let this happen."
Viola stared at the now empty table, shaking her head as though denying what they were all seeing.
No, I took the bag from him. I killed him.
Are you sure about that? Nibs's brows drew together.
Certo, I know when I kill someone,
she snarled, looking every bit like Nibs would be her next victim.
Did he touch you?
Nibs asked.
What? What are you talking about?
Did he touch you?
Nibs shouted. His face had turned a violent shade of red, and he was up in her face, so close that she could have bitten him. Viola pushed him back and wiped his spittle from her face.
He fought me for the book, so yes, he touched me, but he was dead a moment later.
If he touched you, he could have altered your mind.
What are you talking about? I killed him.
It's what Darrigan does.
Nibs sneered, shaking his head at her.
He can read minds, and he can put ideas into them as well. All it takes is a single touch, skin to skin. You probably wouldn't have even noticed.
He's right, Estes said, numb with disbelief. Viola shook her head.
No, it's not possible. There was opium or something like it. A cloud of it filled the room when we took the book from its place. There was no way Darrigan could have done anything, not before I killed him. My knives don't need magic to work.
Where's the knife you used?
Nibs asked. Viola pulled out Libitina, her favorite stiletto blade, and held it up.
Where's his blood?
There should have been blood, Viola whispered.
Darrigan was a stage magician, you imbecile. He trained himself to hold his breath longer than anyone should be able to. The opium wouldn't have affected him if he didn't breathe it.
No,
Viola whispered, shaking her head, as though she refused to believe that he'd tricked her so easily, that he'd destroyed everything. Dolph was dead and the Order would hunt them, and they didn't have the book. Nibs only glared at her.
Then where's the book? Where are the artifacts?
Viola didn't have an answer. But for Esta, the news was that much more devastating. She'd failed. Hart Darrigan, the magician, had the book, and he was gone. So were the artifacts. So was her stone. And so was any chance of her ever getting home. It wasn't long after that things started to fall apart. Before dawn broke the next day, an entire block of tenement buildings went up in flames. The fire brigades stayed away, but boys who wore the Five-Point Gang's mark were seen at the edges of the crowd, watching, stopping any who tried to douse the fires or rescue their belongings. Their alliance with the mayor and with the Order seemed to be growing more complete. Under Tammany Hall's protection, the members of Kelly's gang didn't hesitate to attack anyone they thought might be a threat. Fights broke out over innocent glances, gunfire rained in the streets, catching anyone nearby in the crossfire. No one in the Bowery was safe, not as long as the Order was set on vengeance. Of course, all the unrest was reported as more evidence of the threat the incoming masses of immigrants posed. After he wrote about the fire at Khafra Hall, Sam Watson turned his daily column to denouncing the Magus for the threat they posed to the city. Criminals, degenerates, and thieves were pouring across the borders, he argued, and nothing was being done. If they could destroy an institution as old and important as Khafra Hall, he reminded everyone, they could also threaten the country's very way of life. Near Herald Square, ladies in feathered caps and gentlemen in white gloves pursed their lips and shook their heads as they tisk-tisked the plight of the mayor having to control such a threat. Above Houston, the people of Manhattan went on about their lives as usual, willfully ignoring the madness that raged in the streets below. But the citizens of the areas around Five Points in the Bowery lived on the knife point of fear. They knew the madness wasn't their own doing. Everyone was running scared. Everyone, it seemed, except Nibsy Lorcan, who had somehow stepped into the space left by Dolph Saunders with an ease that surprised Esta. No one had questioned it when Nibs began issuing orders while Dolph's body was still cooling on the bar, while everyone else had turned inward, becoming silent and wary with the irrevocable evidence of Dolph's death. Nibs seemed to have grown 6 inches overnight. He sat in Dolph's old seat like it had always been meant for him. Too soon, she thought, and she couldn't help but remember Hart's words. This has everything to do with him. No one else seemed to question Nibsy's rise, though. Or if they did, they were still too dazed with the shock of what had happened to care. A week later, they were huddled in the kitchen of the Strega, away from the rest of Dolph's gang, when a trio of bowler-hatted boys came through the door. The four of them, Nibs, Viola, Janyu, and Esta, turned as one, already bracing for something worse. The tallest of the three boys stepped forward to where Nibs was sitting, and then gave a jerk of his head, like he wanted to speak to Nibs alone. Nibs took the boy aside and listened intently, his nostrils flaring and his features going hard as the boy talked.
"What do you mean his mother's gone?"
Nibs hissed loudly enough for the rest of the room to turn and watch.
"Just what I told you. They say you ordered her to be moved."
"To where?"
Nibs asked, his face furious.
"They says they didn't know,"
the boy said with a shrug.
"Well, who took her?"
The boy hesitated, a look of confusion on his face.
"They says you did."
Viola sent Esta a questioning look from across the table where they were sitting, but Esta shook her head. She didn't know what the boys were talking about. She glanced at John Yu, but he was too busy watching Nibsy and the other boy with a quiet intensity.
"I didn't do any such thing,"
Nibs seethed, barely able to control the volume of his voice now.
"There's one more thing,"
the boy said. He held himself on guard like he was about to dodge a punch.
"What?"
Nibs's chest was heaving. The boy held out a folded piece of paper.
"They says I was supposed to give you this."
Nibs took the paper with a vicious swipe that had the boy startling back.
"Get out,"
he barked, and he waited until the three boys left before he opened the message and read it. When it was done, he glanced up at Esta. Both Janyu and Viola straightened in their chairs.
"What?"
she asked, not at all liking the look on Nibsy's face. He handed her the paper without a word. It was an advertising flyer. On it, the bold block letters proclaimed that the great Hart Derrigan would attempt the impossible by cheating death with a jump from the Brooklyn Bridge. And across the image of the bridge was a message scrawled in a familiar script. "If you want the book, bring me the girl."
"Hart Derrigan, it seems, isn't dead after all. Not yet, at least,"
Nibs said, meeting her eyes when she looked up from reading.
"There's something I'm missing,"
he said, staring blindly into space, thinking, no doubt, making connections. Then his eyes rested on Esta.
"I can't believe he didn't give you any indication of what he had planned."
Esta went on alert. Nibs had been watching her for 2 days now, and every time she caught him looking, it gave her an uneasy feeling, like he saw something in her that he didn't like.
"He used me the same as everyone," she said carefully. "If it looked like we were close, it was another part of his game."
"No."
Nibs stared at her, the expression in his eyes unreadable.
"I don't think that's the case at all. You meant something to him."
She laughed, a cold, hard expulsion of air that she filled with every bit of her disdain.
"I assure you, I meant nothing to him. Or maybe you forgot how he left me on that stage without any warning."
"So you say,"
Nibs said softly.
"So I know," she told him. "He left me in a room full of the Order's members. If it hadn't been for John Yu, I'd still be there."
Nibs huffed out a laugh.
"She speaks truly,"
John Yu said.
"He left her without any protection. He had no way of knowing that I would be there waiting. That was something Dolph had arranged."
Esta hesitated only a moment at the lie that had slipped so easily from John Yu's lips.
"See?"
she snapped. It took everything she had in her not to glance at John Yu.
"Hart Derrigan can go to hell for all I care."
That much was true. He'd left her. He'd betrayed them all, but he'd left her. And she hated herself for caring about that, for forgetting, even for a moment, why she was there in that city. But it wasn't over yet. She would have one more chance to stop him from destroying the book, one more chance to save them all. She would not fail again. One final night. The docks. Once night had cloaked the city, Hart watched the boat carrying the Order's artifacts glide from the docks, its engines off. When it was out of reach of the shoreline, the great boilers fired up, and the squat craft began to move faster, cutting a path through the starlight reflected in the dark water. He stayed where he was until the boat was no more than a dot on the horizon, knowing for certain now that he would never have the chance to make that trip, would never know what those other shores held in store. Nibs Lorcan had overplayed his hand by warning Hart. It had taken some doing. Late nights and secrets kept from Esta, but in the days leading up to the heist, Hart had managed to grease the right palms for word of where his mother might be. In the end, it had been easy enough, especially with the right kind of touch. Once he discovered she'd been stashed in a rank basement of a brothel near the docks, it had been hell to wait. But he knew he couldn't simply take her out of there without Nibs knowing. If Nibs had realized that he'd lost his leverage, he never would have let Hart near Khafra Hall or the book. So he'd waited, unwilling to chance anything until the night of the heist, when it would be too late for Nibs to do anything to stop him. But by the time Hart finally got to his mother, she'd been fed so much opium that it would be a miracle if she recovered it all. Still, he got her out, as he'd promised. As he gave the old couple who ran the brothel a stack of bills for their trouble, all he had to do was let his finger brush against their palms. It would have been hardly noticeable to them, especially with the way they were focused on the money. But a moment later, they didn't remember him at all. His mother was safe now, or as safe as she could be. Now he needed to turn himself to other things. He'd been watching Jack's warehouse for 2 days. There'd been no sign of Jack or anyone else, and Hart was finally confident that it was safe enough to chance approaching it. He couldn't finish things until he destroyed the machine and the plans to build another. After all, Hart Darrigan might be a bastard. He might be a double-crossing low-life scoundrel, but he wasn't so low as to leave a machine like that whole before he made his escape. Not when he knew the danger it posed to hundreds, maybe thousands of innocent people. It wouldn't be enough to stop Jack indefinitely, he knew, but it would set him back for a while. It would maybe even give the rest of them a fighting chance, especially once Hart and the book with him were gone. First, the machine. The wrench weighing down the pocket of his overcoat should do the trick. He'd destroy Jack's creation and send the whole damn place up in flames. Then he'd go after Esta. He'd explain everything. A shadow stirred near one of the low buildings at his back, and his every instinct came alert. No one could have known he was there. He'd taken every precaution, hidden his tracks twice over. There was no mistaking it, though. The feeling he had of being hunted.
"Who's there?"
he called, but the soft lapping of the water was all he heard in reply.
"I know someone's out there."
He waited, listening, but the feeling of being watched didn't go away.
"If you're thinking of killing me, I'd advise against it. If I'm dead, you'll never find out where I've put the things you're looking for," he said,
not knowing if it was one of Dolph's crew or someone from the Order, and not really caring. Let them do the job for him for all he cared. He hadn't lied. They'd never find the book or the strange artifacts. Not where he'd put them.
"Show yourself,"
he called, his hand already wrapped around the wrench in his coat pocket, as though that would offer much protection. John Yu stepped into a shaft of moonlight. Maybe he should have been relieved that it wasn't Viola, but Hart still felt a tremor of fear run through him. "Let me explain," he wanted to say, but he didn't. Standing in the darkness near the water's edge was no place for pleading. He stood a little straighter instead.
"Did Dolph send you?"
he asked, pretending a confidence he didn't feel.
"Dolph's dead,"
John Yu told him, the flatness in his voice confirming his words.
"That's what I'd heard."
He hadn't wanted to believe it, though.
"Shot in the back over Lena's grave,"
John Yu said, even though Hart hadn't asked. He could almost feel the anger and the anguish in John Yu's usually calm voice,
the night you betrayed us.
I didn't betray Dolph, Hart said. We had an arrangement and I kept my word to him.
But he knew when he'd heard whispers of Dolph's death that everything had gone south.
Then where is the book?
Safe,
he said. John Yu's mouth turned down.
It would be safer with me.
If it were with you, Nibs would have it, and we'd all be screwed. John Yu didn't say anything, simply continued to study him across the narrow stretch between them.
I didn't kill Dolph, he said finally. If I thought you did, you'd be dead already.
He didn't trust John Yu's too calm demeanor.
If you didn't come to kill me, why are you here?
I'm here because Dolph is dead. He gave Hart an unreadable look and took a step closer. But what we do from here, that is up to you. Fool me once. Jack's apartment. Jack Grew was packing the last of his suitcases when the message came. An hour later, he would have been on a train bound to Cleveland and his new position as an assistant to the undersecretary of a refinery on the shores of Lake Erie. The message changed all that, or at least put it on hold for the time being. Jack held on to the folded slip of paper like a lifeline. Not that he trusted Derrigan. No, he wouldn't be taken in by that charlatan again. Daughter of Baron von Filosic, like hell she was. He'd had people search Derrigan's apartment while the pair were putting on their little show at Coffra Hall, and they didn't find any sign of a trunk, or anything else that would indicate that the girl was who they said she was. The redhead had been right. They'd played him, and now Derrigan was going to pay. I have the book for you. Come alone, the message said. Not a chance. When Jack's carriage came to a stop at the foot of the bridge early the next day, he found a steady stream of people heading in the same direction. It looked as though the entire bridge had been closed down to the usual streetcar and carriage traffic. So he stopped a man to ask where they were headed. The man didn't seem to understand what Jack was saying, but he handed him a crumpled flyer. Beneath the grease stains and wrinkles, Jack saw the image of the bridge and the smirking face of Hart Derrigan. It shouldn't have surprised him that he was walking into a virtual circus, considering who he was dealing with. But if Derrigan thought to throw Jack off with his crowd, he was wrong. He'd learned his lesson, and now Derrigan would learn his. He told his uncle, who had, of course, told the High Princept about the note. The order had taken everything from there. Jack looked over his shoulder at the row of buildings lining the waterfront. He could barely make out the glint of the sharpshooter's sight in a fourth-floor window. If anything went wrong, the order wouldn't allow Derrigan to get away. If he tried to come back into the city, he was a dead man. If he tried to make it to the wilds of Brooklyn, order patrols were already waiting. And if Jack himself happened to be in the line of fire, the High Princept had already made it clear that no one would care. A suppressed shudder ran through him. That wasn't going to happen. If anyone was going to kill that piece of shit magician, it was going to be him. So Jack made his way with the rest of the crowd, following the long incline that led out over the shoreline and toward the soaring towers of the bridge. He took the entrance to the far right, unusually taken up by streetcars and trains. The farther he walked, the denser the crowd became. But this wasn't the refined crowd of Broadway. All around him, the clamoring of too many languages assaulted his ears, guttural and brash. The voices were a noisy babble that made him feel as if he were the one who didn't belong. It only served to make him angrier. After all, his family had practically built this city. Still, the crowd would make it that much more difficult for the order to deal with Derrigan. He pulled the brim of his hat low on his forehead and started on his way toward the arches of the first tower. The crowd had come to a stop there. A motley throng of humanity, dressed in the gaudy satins and bright taffetas, of people who didn't know better. People who bought their goods ready-made and three seasons out of fashion. And in the center of the teeming mass, as still as a rock in a current, was the magician. Endgame. The Brooklyn Bridge. It was hard to even pretend confidence with a gun pressing into the small of her back, but Esta did what she could. She couldn't use her affinity. Not with the grip the large boy had on her arm, but she could use the other magic Professor Lachlan had taught her when she was a girl. Confidence is the key to any con. If they see you sweat, you're dead. The morning wind had kicked up by the time they made their way across the span of the bridge to the arches of the first tower that held the monstrous suspension cables aloft. With every step, she sensed what remained of Dolph's crew becoming more nervous, and who could blame them? Though the day was warm, there was a chill in the air. Cold, malicious energy that whispered of danger, a reminder that ahead was the end of the world for anyone with magic. She hadn't been on this bridge since she was a child. Now the closer they got to that tower, the more she felt like the girl she'd once been. But Professor Lachlan wasn't there to help her, and she had a sinking feeling that if anyone carried her off the bridge this time, it would be because she was dead. She straightened her spine, ignoring the kiss of the gun. She would get the book and the stone from Darrigan, or she would die trying. The boy pushed through the crowd, dragging her along, with Nibs following close behind. Viola was there too, somewhere, ready to step in if need be, as were John Yu and a handful of Dolph's crew, all there to make sure that everything went their way, and to be certain that Hart Darrigan never came back into the city. They made their way toward the front of the crowd. Each step was one closer to the cold currents of energy, warning them of disaster and death. Eventually, they reached the point where she could see Hart, already warming the crowd up with some minor sleight of hand. When he looked up and saw her, an emotion she couldn't read, and one she didn't want to think too much about, flashed behind his eyes.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he announced, "I see my assistant has arrived."
He held out his hand as though nothing had happened between them, as though he'd never betrayed her, never left her for dead in a theater filled with the Ortus Aurea.
"Esta, my dear?"
When she didn't move, he asked the crowd to encourage her. Applause surrounded them, and when she glanced at Nibs for some indication of what she should do, she saw his indecision. His eyes were narrowed as he considered Hart, but then he gave a nod of his head.
"If you try anything at all, you're dead," he told her.
She was sick of that particular threat. With a frustrated huff, she stepped toward Hart.
"I've missed you, sweetheart,"
he said as he took her hand and made a show of kissing it for the audience.
"Funny,"
she replied, her eyes stinging with tears that had nothing to do with the breeze.
"I haven't thought about you at all."
The audience, close enough to hear, roared their approval. Hart had already removed his cloak. He handed it to her, and then he proceeded to remove his waistcoat as well. Before he could finish unbuttoning his vest, there was a disruption from deep within their numbers, and an uneasy murmuring rose within the crowd as a man made his way forward, gun drawn. Hart's expression faltered just a little as he gave Jack Grew his most charming smile.
"Jack, how good of you to make it."
"Give me the book, Darrigan,"
Jack said, pointing the gun directly at his chest.
"And the artifacts as well."
"You'll get them soon enough."
"The book,"
he screamed, cocking back the hammer.
"I will not allow you to make a fool of me once again."
Hart's face went serious.
"You're going to have to be patient, Jack.
If you shoot me now, you'll never get what you came here for. So if you'd just lower that thing and..."
It felt like it all happened at once. She was on the bridge, and she was also standing in the hallway of Schwab's mansion. She was watching Hart about to be shot, and she was seeing Logan bleeding on the floor. Two moments, two places in time, but the same gunman. The same deadly weapon set to stop a beating heart. She grabbed Hart and pulled time slow at the same moment that the gun went off, at the same moment that the bullet began traveling in its deadly path. And when she looked up, the bullet inched past them, so close they could feel its heat.
"I thought you hadn't missed me,"
Hart said, close to her ear. She realized that she was holding on to him maybe more tightly than she needed to.
"Where's the book?"
she asked, not letting go as she backed away from him, and the smell of oranges and ivory soap. "It's in my cloak," he indicated that she already held the cloak in her arms. "Along with your cuff." "My cuff?" Her chest went tight. "The one you showed me? The one you were after?" Around them, the world was silent. "And the rest?" she asked. "Gone," he said, pushing a piece of hair out of her eye. "I sent them out of the city last night. By now they're on separate trains, heading to all the places I'll never go." Her fingers tightened on the silky material of the cloak in her hands. "Why would you do that?" "The Order can't have them. Not with what Jack has planned, and I couldn't let Nibs get them either." "Nibs?" It wasn't making any sense. "He planned all of this from the beginning. Lena's death, Dolph going after the book, even you." He pressed his lips together. "He's the one who killed Dolph." "No," she shook her head. "Dolph was shot the night of the heist. Nibs was with us."
"Was he?"
Hart asked flatly.
"Do you know for sure he was waiting outside Coffra Hall that entire time?"
"I can't believe he would," she started to say, but her words fell silent. But it would explain so much about how tense the last couple of days had been at the Strega, about why Nibs had insisted on the gun against her back. "You were in the hall with us," she argued. "You can't know."
"I know what he intended to do," Hart continued, his voice urgent,
but he wouldn't look directly at her.
"For all his ability to see how things will turn out, he wasn't expecting me to punch him that night you got taken to the tombs."
She glanced back at Nibs, his face frozen in a sort of strangled fury, and she saw him suddenly in a different light. She'd been a fool not to see it all along.
"He's been pulling Dolph's strings the whole time. Dolph had no idea."
Esta shook her head again, wanting to deny everything he was telling her. It had to be more of his lies.
"You should have warned Dolph."
"I couldn't," Hart said, not meeting her eyes.
"Nibs had my mother, and I've already wronged her enough in my life. I couldn't do anything more to her. I thought I could work around Nibs. I thought I could get you out, too, but things didn't quite go as I planned that night.
You should have told me.
I couldn't chance him finding out that you knew. The only way I could figure to get around him was to keep you working blind. There was too much at stake."
"You mean like Dolph's life?" she argued.
"I never meant for Dolph to die, but this was bigger than Dolph's life, Esta. He understood that. Nibs cannot get the book. Do you understand me? He doesn't want to free the mages from the city. He wants to rule them, to use them, us, against the Sundren."
His jaw clenched.
"The book's dangerous, Esta. It's not what you think. It's not what any of us thought. In the wrong hands, it would give someone devastating power. If Nibs were the one to control it, he'd be able to make himself more powerful than any magus who's ever lived. I can't imagine the devastation that would follow. No one would be safe."
"I can't..." The enormity of what he was saying felt unbelievable.
"Why now? Why tell me all of this when it's too late to do anything?"
"Because it's not too late for you," he said. "I'm giving you a way out." He took her hand and placed something heavy and smooth into her palm, the cuff with the stone. Immediately she felt the warmth of it, the sureness of its power calling to her.
"Do what you need to do, but either way, get yourself out and take the book with you. You can't let either Nibs or Jack get a hold of it. Everything depends upon that, do you understand? Take it where they can't follow."
"But I..."
"Do you understand?" he demanded again.
"What about you?" she asked, still looking for the angle, the indication that this was all part of a larger game for him.
"I'm dead either way. The book? It's not a normal book. It's like some sort of living thing."
He grimaced, and then he met her eyes. The gray irises that had become so familiar to her were different now. She thought she could see something more than her own reflection in them, colors that she didn't have names for, flashing in their depths.
"When I touched it, I read it more easily than I can read a person. I've seen what's in there, and it's a part of me now. Even if you take the book to where they can't reach it, the Order won't ever stop hunting me."
He shook his head. "I can't risk that.
If they see me jump and see me die, they won't have any reason to hunt you or anyone else. You want to protect the people Dolph was protecting? This is the only way. He gave her a heartbreaking smile. Whatever happens, the Great Heart Darrigan won't soon be forgotten after what I do here today. Her heart ached. Yes, you will, she knew. If he jumped from that bridge, no one would remember him in a week or a month, and definitely not over the years. So we bring down the Brink before that happens, she told him. We free everyone right now and take the Order's power away from them. It wasn't the job she'd been sent to do, but it was what Professor Lachlan intended anyway, she reasoned. You don't understand. None of us do. The Brink isn't just a prison, Esta. It was built to protect magic. If it comes down, it won't free Magus. Think about Tilly. When Jack's machine blew up, it took her life with it. Destroying the Brink would do the same thing. It would destroy any magic that it's taken, and when it does that, it would break everything connected to that magic. You, me, every Magus who exists is connected to the old magic. When part of that dies, so will ours. And without our magic, he couldn't finish. She didn't have words to respond to him. It was too ridiculous and too big a lie to be believed. The Brink was what killed them, not what protected them. You can't expect me to believe that. I'm here, aren't I? He swallowed hard, his mouth tight. If the book had offered me a way out of the city, don't you think I'd be gone? Do you really think I'd be here in the middle of this circus otherwise? I could have used the book to get through the Brink, but the magic in the book is too powerful. The Brink itself might not have held. Jack told me how they made the Brink, connecting the elements through ether. The Order has been trying to find a way to make it larger and more powerful, but Jack told me the connections through the ether are too unstable. The book might have been able to get me through, but that much magic could be enough to overload the circuit, and if that happens, it would be worse than any electrical outage. Because it would make magic go dark, she said, slowly putting the pieces together. Exactly. If I could have gotten out, I would have. I would have even taken you with me. But I can't risk destroying the circuit through the ether. I'm still here because there's no way out without destroying the entire Brink, and to destroy it would be to threaten all magic, all Magus. There's no way out for me, so I'm trusting you to help me finish this. She stared at him, searching for the crack in the mask that would expose the lie in what he was telling her. But she did believe one thing. If there was a way out of the city, if there was a way through the Brink, Heart Darrigan would have taken it already. But he hadn't. Even now, he was giving the book to her and giving up the one thing he'd wanted from the beginning. If that wasn't enough to convince her, the fear in his stormy eyes was. Ready? He asked. No, she said. There were a million other questions she needed to ask. There had to be another way. I can't. He placed his fingers against her lips to stop her. Let's finish this. He tore himself away from her grasp. And as he slipped away from her, she let go of time and the world began again. When Heart didn't fall, Jack stood, too shocked to move, which gave the crowd time to wrestle the gun from his grasp. It took only a few moments more before he was arrested and dragged away, screaming and shouting all the while. Once it was calm, Heart took time removing his shirt. The muscles of his arms broadcast exactly how tense he was as he made a show of stripping for the public. The cool air raised goose flesh on his bare shoulders, but his eyes were steady, calm. A kiss for luck, my dear? He asked, his gray eyes determined. When the crowd erupted with enthusiastic hoots, she couldn't deny him. She allowed him to put his mouth over hers. This was not the kiss she'd wanted for herself that day in Hart's apartment. His lips were cool, as though he'd already been claimed by the water below, and there was nothing but a resigned determination in the quick brush of skin against skin, mouth against mouth. She wasn't sure she trusted him, but to know he was about to die? I can take him back with me, she thought in a sudden rush. To hell with everyone who might see them disappear. Too soon he pulled away from her. And the time for decisions had passed. With a flourish, Heart mounted the railing. His eyes scanned the crowd, looked over them to the city beyond,
and she thought she saw regret flash across his expression. Nibs exploded from the crowd.
Stop him!
Esther saw some of Dolph's boys move toward the railing where Hart stood, but before they could come any closer, police stormed the bridge. The crowd descended into confusion, surging in all directions to get away from the raised billy sticks and angry whistles of the police. In the confusion, she was pushed back from the railing and from Hart. There was no way to reach him, no way to turn him from what he meant to do. She'd saved the book, but she couldn't save him. Hart's eyes met hers.
Go,
he mouthed, and the air seemed to shimmer around him, the sun throwing up a glare as he let go of the cabled railing, and then he was gone. Her heart seized. Too late. She pushed through the crowd to the railing where he disappeared. Below, there was no sign of him. She watched, waiting for him to surface or for some indication that he'd made it. But even as the crowd behind her was a riot of anger and confusion, the water was silent, holding its secrets as absolutely as a grave. Esther didn't see Nibs coming for her through the crowd. She was too busy trying to breathe through the shock of what had just happened, but as she clung to Hart's cloak, she felt the hard outline of the book. Her cuff was warm in her hand. He hadn't betrayed her in the end. He'd given her exactly what she needed. But before she could fully comprehend that he was well and truly gone, she felt someone grab her arm.
Did he give it to you?
Nibs demanded, his pale face close to hers.
I know he told you where it is.
What? She tried to shake him off, but his hands gripped her arm painfully.
Tell me,
he said, pulling a snub-nosed pistol from his jacket and placing it under her chin.
Tell me, or you could join him.
She couldn't breathe. She couldn't make sense of what was happening.
Tell me what he did with the book,
Nibsy said, his breath hot and sour on her face as the cool barrel of the gun pressed against her throat. Esther knew in that moment that Hart had been right. She couldn't give it to him. She knew then that whatever happened, Nibs would never be worthy of the power it held. Her mind raced for some lie as she shifted the cloak against herself so he wouldn't feel the book within its folds. He clicked the hammer of the gun back, but before he could pull the trigger, his body went rigid and he gasped in pain. The gun fell from his hand and he let go of his grip on Esther as he grabbed his leg. Esther backed away from him and looked up to find Viola standing a few feet off, her face creased into a serious frown as she watched Nibs pull the silver knife from his thigh. She gave Esther a solemn nod and then she was gone, melting into the crowd as though she'd never been there. Only the feel of the cuff in her hand, warm and urgent and compelling, brought Esther to her senses. She gave in to the pull of Ishtar's key, allowed the warmth of its energy to expand her until she could see the layers of time and history in that place. All the seconds to come that wouldn't have Hart Derrigan in them. Nibs looked up at her, hate and anger twisting his features. He raised the gun, but it was too late. She'd found the layer of time she wanted, and she was gone. A Starless Sky. Present day, the Brooklyn Bridge. Esther barely had time to dodge the semi-truck as it sped past her. Gasping, she clung to the side of the roadway. The gusting air from the passing traffic lifted the hair around her face and whipped her skirts around her legs. It was night, but the glow of the city, her city, shattered the darkness. The gentle hum of automobiles replaced the clattering racket of cobbled streets and wooden wheels, and above her she couldn't make out the stars. Everything felt too fast. After weeks in a city that moved at the speed of a plodding horse or a rumbling elevated train, the flurry of cars and people felt like too much. Hart's cloak was still in her arms, the book still heavy within its folds, and if she just ignored the fact that it smelled like him, that combination of ivory soap and the faint scent of oranges, she'd be fine. She had to be fine. She still had work left to do. She kept her head down and made the long walk back to Midtown, to the parking lot she'd left from, beneath the crown of the Empire State Building. For her, weeks had passed, but for the city, everything felt exactly the same. The summer night was warmer than the day in late March she'd left behind, and by the time she reached her destination, she was sweating from the heavy skirts and the pace she'd set. As she rounded the corner, she stopped short and then retreated. The street where Dakari's car had once been was now blocked off, and a small crowd had formed. Shards of red from the lights of police cars bounced off the darkened windows of the surrounding buildings. From her vantage point, she couldn't see the street where Dakari had fallen, and she couldn't tell if he was still there. Esta had tried to return to a few minutes after she originally left, just as Professor Lachlan had taught her, but after the walk from the bridge, she was too late. If they had Dakari, if he were injured or worse, she had to fix this. She had to go back and save him. Forcing herself to ignore the sounds of the sirens and the lights flashing around her, Esta focused on finding the layers of time. The stone in the cuff on her arm grew warm, but she ignored its heat and sifted through the moments, peeling back the minutes and seconds until she thought she was close to the instant the gunfire had erupted. She could almost see it. The lights from the police cars began to dim, their sirens fading into the quiet of the night before her original departure. But just as she found that moment, the same sense of foreboding came over her that made her body feel as if it were burning all those weeks ago, the night she left. The stone felt hot, like a branded warning against her skin, just as it had before. Something is wrong. She took a deep breath, fighting against her own panic, struggling to make herself slip back to the seconds before Dakari was attacked, but this time her instincts worked against her. With a gasping sob, she lost her hold on time, and the present, with all its lights and noise, came flooding back. She bent over to steady herself, her heart pounding and her skin cold despite the warmth of the summer night, despite the heat of the stone against her skin. "No," she whispered, as though hearing her own voice would help her overcome her fear. But her voice sounded scared, shaken. It was too much of a coincidence for her to feel this way twice, but whether it had something to do with this particular moment, with the stone, or with something else, she didn't know. What she did know was that Dakari's life depended on her. She needed to try again for Dakari's sake. But before she could, a hand grasped her by the shoulder and pulled her back, as another hand covered the yelp of surprise that she would have otherwise let out. "Shh," a familiar voice said, close to her ear. "I'm going to let you go, but you need to keep quiet." She turned to find Dakari, standing behind her, but she couldn't do much more than open and close her mouth, numbly, searching for the words that wouldn't come. "How did you—" she said finally, but she trailed off. She couldn't make sense of what she was seeing, even as she felt the relief of having him there, whole and alive, before her. He tore open his shirt, showing her the marred, bulletproof vest beneath. "I'm always prepared, E." He rubbed at his chest, grimacing. "Though those gunshots are going to leave a bruise," he said. Esta noticed the blood on his pants. "Dakari, your leg." "I know, but I had to wait for you to get back. Now that you are, we should get out of here." In the distance, she could already hear the scream of another siren bouncing off the buildings. "Come on," he said, lifting himself from the pavement. "You drive." She caught the keys he tossed her.
"Maybe you could do that time thing you do? Get me back faster?" he asked.
"Right," she said, still so relieved to see him that she could hardly breathe. "He's not gone," she thought, as she pulled the seconds slow. "I thought you were dead." She helped him to the car, the city silent around them.
"Nah, I'm damn hard to kill."
He patted his bulletproof vest again, wincing as he slid into the back seat with his injured leg propped in front of him. "Who were those guys?" she asked as she took the driver's seat and glanced back in the rearview mirror. A shadow crossed his expression.
"Who knows?"
he told her. But he didn't quite meet her eyes as he said it.
"How long were you away this time?"
he asked, tending to his leg as she started the car and began navigating through the strange tableau of a city gone nearly still. "Weeks," she said, suddenly overwhelmed by the knowledge that they were all dead. Whatever had happened on that bridge, it was more than 100 years later. Chanyu, Viola, the rest of the crew at the Strega, they'd all be dust in the ground.